Christopher, the Public Services Programme has funded nearly 50 research projects into public service performance. Can you give me an example that challenges conventional thinking?
Well, let's take the question of what the public thinks about public services and their performance. And that's something that the programme has investigated in quite a number of its projects. For instance, when we look at public attitudes towards choice in public services across the four countries of the UK, and the programme has mounted the first ever study across all four countries of the UK on this topic in a project led by John Curtis. What we find when we ask that question is that public attitudes about the importance of choice of various kinds in the provision of school education, healthcare, social care, vary by very much less, by small numbers of percentage points, among the populations of the four bits of the UK, much less than you would expect from the very different policies that have been pursued by the various governments over the past 10 years or so.
What else have you found out about public attitudes to public service performance?
Well, let's take one or two other examples. First, let's take the case of public attitudes towards the police, a very important public service. And if we look at how public attitudes have changed over the past two decades or so in England and Wales, as Andreas Sabulla did in a project for us, what we find is that despite all the many expensive reforms in policing that were said and claimed to lead to better police performance, public perceptions of police effort have deteriorated noticeably over that time. Maybe that wouldn't surprise you, although it's certainly not very encouraging for the architects of those reforms. But at the same time, and this might maybe surprise you more, the ethnic minorities of the population have become noticeably less negative in their view of police performance, so that what we're seeing is a narrowing of the gap noticeably over those two decades or so. A second example is that when we look at public expectations of what sort of services they expect to get, and if we look at how those expectations relate to the satisfaction that the public report with services that they get from local authorities in England, that was something that Oliver James examined for us, what we find is that satisfaction seems to be very heavily influenced by expectations. And the ironic conclusion of that is that one of the ways of improving satisfaction with public services is to find ways of lowering expectations.
So, Christopher, you mean that raising expectation can lower satisfaction with public services. Can you give me another example of that?
We've shown that public services such as health, education, policing, and defence vary considerably in their salience over time. By salience, I mean how much importance the public put on them relative to other issues. And David Halpern from the Institute for Government, in a project for us, analysed Ipsos Mori opinion poll data over 35 years or so for the UK to bring out this point. And what really matters to the public at one point in time, whether it's education or defence or other things, can be much less important at other points in time. And what we have seen over those 35 years that David Halpern examined was that back in the 1970s and 1980s, what the public were most concerned about were big macroeconomic issues, inflation, employment, economic growth, and relatively less interested in the quality of public services like schools, healthcare, etc. But what happened 30-odd years later was that those positions had reversed and the public were much more interested in the public services than they were in those macroeconomic questions. Just lately, in this period of economic downturn, we've started to see that reverse. So what we're showing is that the importance of public services to the public vary over time, both with other big issues the public could worry about and also relative to one another.
And can you tell me why you've chosen those particular examples?
Because they're all examples of things that we've found out about public attitudes to public service performance that aren't obvious, that require quite a lot of careful research to establish, and that make very important contributions to public debates.
So, Deborah, has the programme's work all been about public attitudes?
No, not at all. Another key theme of the programme has been incentives in public services, how to get people to improve their performance or to change their behaviour in certain ways. And the programme has funded a range of projects looking at how both individuals and organisations respond to incentive structures of different types. So, for example, financial incentives, pay for performance for individuals or organisations that have to face target regimes with monetary rewards or sanctions attached to those targets. And what we find actually is that in some cases, public service providers do respond as economists would predict that they do. So, for example, a project by Jan Clarkson and colleagues has showed that dentists who are paid on a per treatment, a piecework, if you like, a per filling basis, actually provide more treatments than those paid on a fixed salary. So they respond in the way you would expect to that financial incentive. At an organisational level, another project from the programme has shown that hospitals in England responded to the waiting times targets they were set by reducing waiting times. And that's relative to Scottish hospitals whose waiting times didn't reduce so much and who weren't under such a financial incentive scheme.
But does it always turn out as predictably as that? For example, in 2004, when the contract for family doctors was changed to a pay-for-performance basis, there was a budgetary overspend of nearly £200 million.
That's a perfect example of a situation where the direction of the response is predictable, but the magnitude of that response is much less so. And I think this is quite a common finding from social science research, that actually the impact of these kind of incentive schemes are less predictable, are harder to predict than perhaps some of the heated debates about them might suggest. And there are examples from the programme of this occurring across a range of public service areas. For example, the introduction of measures to prevent bed blocking or within the NHS internal market.
So, Deborah, what do you think are the broader lessons that policymakers should take away from this research?
I think policymakers need to be aware of the broader and the potentially adverse effects of these kind of incentive schemes. I'll give you two examples. You mentioned the new contract for family doctors and how that created an overspend. And it's certainly true that under that new contract, family doctors exceeded the targets that they were given on specific items of performance, specific treatments that triggered payments. And that's what created the overspend. But actually, at the same time, they underprovided those treatments that weren't included in the incentive scheme. So here's an example of a situation where an incentive scheme that targets certain aspects of performance can actually lead to the neglect of other aspects. A second example I can take from a study of local government in England by George Boyne and his colleagues. It might be the case that an incentive scheme creates a strong incentive not to fail, but not such a strong incentive to be the best. And George Boyne and colleagues found that actually that's what happened for local government in England, and they were given the incentive for mediocrity. And I don't think that was either the predicted or the desired outcome.
Let's turn to the question of what actual difference these interesting discoveries make to policy and practice. Christopher, can you give me an example where the programme's work has influenced public services, policy or debate?
Let's take the vexed question of how public services protect vulnerable children from abuse or worse. And as we know, that's one of the most sensitive and difficult issues in public services, because very hard decisions about risk have got to be made quickly on the basis of often incomplete information, but where the consequences of getting it wrong if a child is murdered or abused are very serious. Sue White and her colleagues looked in detail at the way that social workers in England and Wales made those difficult decisions, and they went into everything from how the details of the software that those people worked with operated. They looked at how management functioned at various levels in those organisations, and they produced a sort of flight simulator in which you could explore how individuals faced with those frontline decisions made those tricky decisions. And when 2 years ago a very tragic case of a child being tortured to death came to light without the relevant social services department having picked up the risk, and there was serious questioning about the way those systems worked, Sue White, our researcher, was put onto the government social work task force that recommended major changes to the software systems and that were used in child protection.
That's a clear case of research impact, but is it an isolated example? Can you give me any more examples?
Let's take the case of public transport. And I think it's fair to say that one aspect of performance in public transport that the public care about is speed. And when Tim Leunig, in a project funded by the programme, examined the timetabled speed of 50 rail journeys in Britain across the 20th century, he did indeed find that speed had increased in the long-distance rail journeys as a result of massive investment in specific high-speed rail links. But actually what he also found was that that is in sharp contrast to London's commuter lines. They account for two-thirds of all rail travel in Britain, but because they hadn't seen nearly as much investment, they had seen little or no improvement in speed across 50 years. Tim's findings has attracted enormous interest, and actually what's one aspect is his ideas on how to redirect investment towards these shorter commuter lines are being given keen attention by at least one political party and more generally the policy world.
And these two examples we've just been giving you show very clearly how research can feed into policy making as the ideas get taken up. But maybe the most direct way in which research can impact on policy is when researchers go directly into work for policy organisations. And we've seen that happen in at least one case in the programme. For example, Dirk Halbrich, one of our researchers, worked with Ian McLean on a project looking at how the performance regime for local government in England and Wales operated, and looked at the challenges of compiling meaningful rankings of those organisations, and later went to work in the government's Prime Minister's strategy unit working on very similar issues. And that's about as direct a way as you can get for researchers to have an impact on policy.
Well, one last question to both of you. The Public Services Programme is coming to its end now. How will it be remembered? What is its legacy?
Well, we could spend a long time in answering that, so let's just limit ourselves to a few points. The programme's going to leave several really important things behind it. One is that it's going to leave behind a concentrated set of research findings on public service performance. We've tried to give you a flavour of some of the discoveries earlier on. We've looked into how performance is conceived or perceived, how it can be measured and managed, what the causes and consequences of good or bad performance are. And our discoveries on those issues have been presented on all five continents. They've been presented in cities from Bergen to Cape Town, from Beijing to Tucson. They have been or are being published in top peer-reviewed expert journals. And those research findings are going to be influencing future generations as they refine our findings and our questions and revisit our data into the future. And they will do that because these issues of public service performance are just as important in lean economic times as they are in times of greater prosperity, maybe even more so.
I agree that's important, but I think it's also important to emphasise that the programme is larger than the sum of its parts. It will also leave behind a networked interdisciplinary community of over 100 researchers and experts in Britain alone who have developed whole new areas of research, for example, in medical performance, who have worked together on joint publications, on conferences and on workshops. Here's a few statistics for you. Currently, there are 5 books and 7 special issues of journals published or in press that draw out the key findings and the key themes from the programme. We've held over 100 conferences, workshops, seminars to disseminate the findings of the programme to audiences from the academic community, policymakers and practitioners. And I think also the programme has created a forum for fruitful dialogue between researchers and practitioners. For example, in international bodies such as the World Bank, national government departments, the Treasury, the Cabinet Office. I could give you more examples, but also people from government departments overseas have talked to programme researchers about the findings and have taken some of the lessons from programme research back to their countries. On top of that, we've had conversations and dialogue with national non-government organisations such as the General Medical Council and the National Audit Agencies within the UK. And at the level of the devolved administrations across the UK, we've also made contributions. For example, we've helped to develop the Public Services Management Network in Scotland.
And maybe a third point to finish on is that the programme's likely to continue to have an impact well into the 2010s. And beyond that, as the national and international networks that it's established continue to function, as its research findings and data continue to be refined and worked on, and as those who've worked on the programme continue to be influential over the development of public services well into the future.
Thank you.